Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast, a collection of conversations with cool people who do cool things. Brought to you by Papercraft Miracles. Each week, we'll bring you inspiring stories of persistence, passion, and purpose. With your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lore.
Welcome to the Reach the Stars podcast. I'm your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lore. And today, I have one of my favorite people in the entire world as my guest. The OG, the HFB, Becky Goldberg-Petty, who used to work for me, full disclosure. But in hiring her, I just like paid the best friend I never had to become my best friend. And then like, she was like, okay, this is cool enough. You can stop paying me now. I'll go get another job. And now we're just friends.
Well, and then I, you know, come back and do shit with you for free. So
I know, because you're the greatest. Anyway, so
am I allowed to say shit?
Of course. This is my show. You know me, right?
I can say fuck.
You can say whatever you want.
Oh yeah.
First Amendment podcast.
That's good. I saw a meme the other day that said, grow up and stop referring to people as Karen. Say cunt like an adult.
That's a good one. That's a good one. So anyway, on the show today, Becky Goldberg-Petty is many things. But she is an educator, a very, very highly educated educator who knows way more than I do about a lot of things.
Useless things.
Very interesting things. She's done some amazingly cool things in her life. She's gone through some amazingly difficult things in her life, and she's a mom and an activist and a just general kick-ass baby wearing goddess that lives out on the earth in Canada. Aww.
Probably
welcome to the show.
Anybody's ever said to me.
Oh,
thank you. I can think of a few things I would want to do rather than talk to you when I'm alone in my house with no child and no husband. But
I hear that too.
But you know, this is second best.
Awesome. That makes me feel so good. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit more about you and your story and where you come from?
So in the theater world and in kind of like the New York City artist world, there's this new phrase that has been coined that I really find myself identifying with, and it's a multi-hyphenate. And, you know, so I have a friend in New York City who has a podcast called The Multi-Hyphenate, and it's becoming this, you know, this great term for people who typically are kind of in the arts, but are able to move all of their transferable skills into whatever sector they want to be in. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the world that I live in. My bachelor's degree is in English and my master's degree is in some shit called dramaturgy that nobody knows anything about. I have to explain it all the time. But somehow I've found myself in the world of higher ed and in the world of higher education and administration and curriculum design, which is super fun and kind of just scratches the creative itch for me. And I get to do all the fun of teaching without all of the grading because I build all of the work and then somebody else grades it. Excellent.
That's amazing. I love that you're like, oh, I get to do this design and curriculum thing. It's fun. Like the idea of design and curriculum makes me want to die. Like enough where I have avoided planning, executing, and recording my own workshops for literal years because I can't like plan like that. So I love that you're like, oh, it's so easy. I got this.
It's so much fun especially because I'm in the world of distance learning. So a lot of what I do, I'm an instructional designer. So a lot of what I do has to do with distance education and online learning and all of these things that, you know, it really came to in the pandemic that no one knew how to do this. All of these poor teachers were in one day having to try and figure out, navigate this whole new world. And in talking to a lot of them, I started realizing that I speak a different language. So for me, building that curriculum is super duper fun because I get to find ways to not bore people, right? So you say, yeah, that, you know, that doesn't sound fun for you, but I create learning materials that are like back and forth engaging, where I don't actually have to be in the space, but it does kind of interact with my students like a conversation. And it's, I don't know.
I know what we need to do. I need to have you plan my workshops and then I'll just record them. I don't know why I didn't think of that before.
Girl,
genius.
For real.
Genius.
Yeah, I will write you like full out professional lesson plans.
Thank you. That's amazing. HFB, FTW. Oh my God. All the acronyms.
$10,000 each.
I'll do what I can.
All that seed bomb money.
Take me a long time to make that 10 grand back on workshops. Maybe not. They were really well done, you know, like maybe not. Anyway. So tell people more about you. I'm going to stop bogarting the conversation.
No, you're good. So I don't know if I ever write a memoir, it's going to be called Cynically Optimistic. I feel like that's all you need to know. Interview over. So I am a mom. I have a 4.5-year-old son who is currently in the hospital for a routine EEG, nothing bad. He is one of 15 documented births with his particular gene variant and his medical conditions. And he's a terrorist. He's an absolute terrorist.
He's really awesome, y'all. He's really awesome.
He's great. He's so smart and funny and just understands the world in this really amazing way. And it's just great. I mean, I never understood in the past when I would watch interviews with people who said that they wouldn't change their children, right? And that they wouldn't, you know, if their child was sick, they wouldn't make them better. If their child was, you know, had some kind of disability, that they wouldn't want to take it away. And as a parent, like, I never want my son to be in pain. I never want him to hurt. I don't want him to be physically, biologically ill, but I wouldn't change him for the world, because I have, over the course of the past 5 years, gained such a perspective on life that every step that little boy takes is a reason to fucking celebrate. You know, it's not his birthday, but yesterday we had cake and pizza. We have a cake and pizza party because it's 4 years since his last surgery. And so all of these, you know, moments in people's lives that, like, a lot of people I think take for granted, I have been forced to kind of stop and realize that every single smile is valuable, and every new word he learns and every song he memorizes, or, you know, or sight word he reads, is like a big fuck you to this really shitty hand of genetics that his father and I did the deed with, you know. That went from really eloquent to did the deed with. I feel like that's quintessential Becky right there.
Yes,
like
that, in a nutshell. That is what it's like to be a friend. Which I love. It's great.
Yeah. So I don't know. I wouldn't change him. He's stubborn as shit, but that little boy is going to make a mark in the world. And I think, you know, for me, it's just given me such a sense of pride and strength, and turned me into a really fierce advocate and educator and all of these things. Cause, you know, of all of the things to be really passionate about, your kid is definitely up there. And I say that now I sound like one of those parents that actually likes their children. I don't. He's a demon. I have a lot of mixed feelings about being a mom, but it doesn't, none of that can disrupt this sort of biological feeling of pride and love. Mm-hmm. I'm done.
I love how, like, just open and unapologetic you are about your whole life. You're just like, yep, that's it.
I wasn't for like a long time. It's a very like past 5 years thing that I've stopped giving a fuck.
It's pretty awesome to have arrived at IDGAF. Today's show is going to be called Acronyms. Acronyms.
Acronyms. Yes, no, acronyms. Not acronyms.
That's acronyms. Not what I meant to say.
Acronym is not a thing.
It could be a thing if it was a thing.
An anachronism is a thing. Do you know what anachronism is?
No, I don't.
That's like in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, when they say, yay, hear the clock. But there was no fucking clock in ancient Rome, bitches. That's an anachronism.
Mm-hmm. See? Every time I hang out with you, I learn something.
But useless, useless. It's a useless piece of information.
Not useless, because I might use it in a poem someday. Like, I might really need that. That particular cadence of a word, and I'll be like, oh yes, the podcast, that's right. Woo! <Man. laughs> So for anyone who has been listening to this ridiculousness that we were recording today, because Becky and I really have a lot of fun when we talk to each other, I've referenced her as the HFB. Becky has given herself this title. Mm-hmm. And do you want to tell everyone what it means?
Yeah, I am Papercraft Miracles head flower bitch.
I love it. I love that my company inspires someone to want to be said head flower bitch. And it is like my number one goal in life to make enough money in this company where I can afford to hire you at like more than you're making right now to work for me and make flowers. So
I would love that.
I'm doing the best I can.
You're doing amazing. You're doing amazing. I feel like I'm sitting here on the sidelines of just watching a great become great. It's been so fun to watch your journey this past year.
It has been crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Good crazy.
Yes. Good crazy. Yeah. So for anyone who hasn't seen my Instagram, there is a big secret thing that I've been doing. I was out in LA doing a secret project. And I'm gonna with not be able to talk about it with really awesome secret people. And secret it was super people. Cool. But I'm not able to say anything about it until I'm allowed to say some stuff about it. So I just putting it out there that I'm very excited. And it's really hard for me not to say.
She's going to get sued if she says anything about it.
Yeah, so I can't say anything. But once I'm allowed to, they will provide me said things I'm allowed to say, and I will say those things. And
by say those things, you mean you will like stand up on the roof of your building and scream them so that the entirety of BlackRock can hear you.
Maybe. I might do that. So I am just curious to pick your brain about a couple of things. One, yeah. Like college in the theater and like post-college in the theater. Like, I just am so fascinated by that whole subculture. And it's really interesting because I was never really involved in it, but it's really cool for me to kind of get a little window into it. Cause I took a couple of acting classes, when I was in college, but nothing like a whole, and I didn't do like a whole play or anything. So I want to hear more about.
So I kind of got bit by it a little bit late in life. So it wasn't until my senior year of undergrad, and I was taking a playwriting course as part of my creative writing minor, and took a playwriting course with the wonderful Larry Carr, who is a brilliant playwright and an amazing human and sort of looks like Beverly Leslie from Will and Grace. And he's just one of my favorite people on earth. And I was so scared going into this class because I fancied myself a short story writer. And I loved language and loved playing with narration, and dialogue scared me. I would get through an entire like 10, 15 page short story and have two lines of dialogue. And so when I was thrown into this class where dialogue was really the only tool I had, it was a really big culture shock. And I found myself falling in love with it. And now I love writing dialogue. I whenever I'm sort of envisioning scenes in my head, it's harder for me to get back in the place of the narration than it is for me to hear what's happening with the dialogue. And so I fell in love with it and decided I wanted to go to grad school for theater. And my grad school cohort was fantastic. I met a really great dude there. His name is Chris. He is currently at the hospital with our son. And started just really loving theater. But I think my first like real true taste of the theater culture that you're talking about is when I was teaching at a community college. So I am like 24, 25 years old, teaching a bunch of 18, 19 year olds. So really not that big an age gap. There were some kids that were even kids that were older than I was because they were returning students and stuff like that. So it was really at that point in my life, more of a peer group than anything else. And what I found there is because when you're in theater, because when you take an acting class, because when you're doing scene work and kind of delving into the psychology of all of these people, you are making yourself really, truly vulnerable. And people tend to flock to theater because it's like, you know, they're the weirdos. I used to call them, you know, call us the Island of Misfit Toys. And the Island of Misfit Toys all kind of flocked to the theater department. But then the sociological thing that you're talking about is just because we are in such close spaces with each other for so long at a time, doing really vulnerable work with each other and having to just expose ourselves in ways that we don't typically do in society, and help to bring that out of others and all of that. And so you wind up creating this really just amazing, bizarre, found family. And like, I'm still in touch with a bunch of my theater students. And, you know, as much as I like to nag on them because they're obnoxious pains in my ass, they're some of the greatest people I know and some of the people that I like value the most in my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I want to know if you will talk a little bit more about how you got from being in grad school to living in Buffalo.
I got fired. So when I was in my graduate program, it was a graduate theater program, but the writing program at Stony Brook University pulled the two strongest writers from the graduate theater department and taught them how to teach writing. And so I got dragged from, I not dragged, went willingly, because it also came with a full scholarship. So, you know, free grad school. I started teaching writing and started learning about scholarship and pedagogy and everything that goes into educating 18 to 20, whatever year olds and older. And fell in love with higher education, fell in love with being there, fell in love with my students. We wound up, both of us, my husband and I, working on Long Island at various schools for better part of like 10 years or so, maybe. And then we were adjuncting, and this is like, you know, people want to tell you that college professors make a ton of money. They don't. We were adjuncting, and the school that we were adjuncting at paid their adjuncts pretty well. And then one day we found out that the entire adjunct budget had been cut from our department. And so my husband, myself, and 22 other members of our department, who are all brilliant teachers, all got fired on the same day. Or not fired, that we got non-renewed. We can't call it fired because we weren't actually on contract. But it's, you know, so all of a sudden we were in contract to buy a home, lost like something like $12,000 throughout the entire process, and considering the fact that we didn't actually buy that home, we were in contract, ready to close. Couldn't buy the home. We lost our health insurance for our medically fragile child, which is like the scariest shit you've ever felt in your life, not knowing if you're going to have to choose between like paying a hospital bill and saving your kid's life. Like, that's, you know, ugh. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. It's awful. So, you know, we were really freaked out and scared and had no idea what to do. And we were living down on Long Island, and the cost of living there is just exorbitant, even more than what the market here is doing. And so we had a friend reach out from Buffalo and got in touch and said, hey, do you guys want to move to Buffalo? I can give one of you a job. And it was like, okay. And then Chris's old professor from Geneseo got in touch with him and said, I can give you a couple of teaching classes. And so we went from having no jobs in the one of the highest cost of living areas of the country to having like 1.5 jobs somewhere that was much more affordable. We went from paying $1,800 a month for our rental to $775 for a place that was exactly the same size. So just sort of for comparison's sake. And we were like freaked the fuck out the first week that we moved here in January. We moved to Buffalo January 19th.
Oh my God. I have to tell you something. That's my mom's birthday.
Oh,
like that's the day when like, she sends awesome shit to happen to me, or like big important shit she sends to
me. No way!
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Like the fire was on her birthday. I got the big call about the seed bomb job on her birthday. Like a lot of weird things have happened to me on her birthday.
Stop, I'm going to cry, Robin.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so crazy.
Thank you, Robin. And so we moved here in the middle of winter in the snow, and then all of a sudden, and we were freaked out, had like a horrible move. It was awful. We couldn't get my sofa that is like my happy place. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get it up to our second story apartment. It was a mess. And then 2 days later we were driving down Hurdle and we were like, wait, what is this place? This is amazing. We're walkable to like that coffee shop and that old movie theater and, you know, all of these things. And we just all of a sudden it was like rose colored glasses came on. And now 3 years later, they still haven't come off. I love it here. So we, you know, job hopped a little bit, and I'm sort of settling into what I'm, you know, hoping to be my career, in this, you know, in instructional design and building curriculum and stuff like that. And we bought a house, and we have, our kid has great doctors, and we love our neighborhood, and it's like, we call it the best worst thing that's ever happened. You know, and that on top of like in five years, we had all of that. Plus my son's health issues. He's had two brain surgeries before he was a year old. Plus my dad got diagnosed with cancer and died when I was 7 months pregnant. And so it was just this like crazy whirlwind of things. And then all of a sudden things started to settle for us. And then the pandemic happened. so it's just funny. And it's not, it's certainly not lost on me that like at the point right now where I'm the most settled and the most sort of economically comfortable that I've ever been, that the rest of the world is just, you know, there's other people's lives are in complete shambles, not lost on me. And, you know, so that's part of the reason why I do a lot of the advocacy work that I do, for the Hydrocephalus Association and all that, is because, you know, I realized that I have it pretty lucky after 5 years of hell. We somehow managed to come out the other side and wound up in Buffalo.
I'm so glad that you did. Thanks, Ma, for sending me this cool person.
So cool.
Oh, man. the changes that we made in my company when you worked for me was just like, it was magical. It was magical. Just like it needed to happen like right then. And oh, it's the greatest.
I mean, I don't know. I know it's supposed to be about me and not you, but like, you're exactly you cultivate the exact type of work environment that makes someone love being there. Like, even now it's like, oh, you know, I like my job, but like, I have to get up and go to work. When I was with you, it was just like, this is great. I get to go and hang out with one of my favorite people on the planet and make each other piss our pants laughing all day. And that's, I mean,
seriously, like, that's what it was. But also coming up with a lot of really brilliant, awesome,
yeah,
shrewd business ideas in the middle of it, and making fun things, beautiful things, learning how to make beautiful things that people are just so enthralled with. It's just,
It's such a, like, the reason I call myself the head flower bitch is because of all of the things that you taught me and all of the things that I learned being a part of your company. Something, making flowers, stretching petals for me is just cathartic. It is just such a place of like zen and peace, and, you know, this kind of repetitive watching it go from this flat nothing piece of paper into something incredible. I mean, there were times where you or I made a flower that I would just stare at and be like, this can't not be real. Like, it, yeah, looks real. It looks, yeah, fucking real.
Yeah, totally. Oh, so, those roses in the garland. Oh, they're, yes, just,
I know. Oh, totally.
Beautiful. Shout out to Leah Griffith for that pattern, by the way.
Yeah. Beautiful. Those beautiful, like, heirloom roses.
Yes. Anyway, if anyone's curious, I'll put a link to a picture of that in the show notes if you want to see it.
Yeah, but I feel like that's one of those things that you made and will never sell because you,
oh, no, never.
You can't part with it. You're too emotionally attached.
Oh my God. It was so much work. And it is one of the most beautiful things that I have ever made, hands, yeah, down. Like, a lot of the things that we made together are some of my favorite pieces of art. Like that giant freaking tie-dye night sky triangle with all the lights in it. I mean, like, that thing was insane. And
insane. I feel really like honored and lucky to be able to make both lowercase and capital art with you.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like the lowercase art is so fun and silly and beautiful. And, you know, and I love being a part of like the stories that, you know, people's lives and people's stories when your clients come in and, you know, want you to create something beautiful for them. But then also I got to be a part of like the dirty, stained, you know, on our knees all day with our underwear sticking up out of our pants, you know, hand painting this fucking 14 foot tall piece of paper.
Yeah. Yep. It was crazy.
I just feel really lucky to have gotten the chance to do that with you.
Yep. And it's on, we got it on film.
Yes. Yes. Including the underwear hanging out of our pants.
Yep. If you watch the video long enough, you can't miss it.
Definitely some butt crack.
Yes, for sure. And so with that, it leads me to my next topic, which is, life as someone who is neurodivergent.
So this is a fun one. I got diagnosed with ADHD at the ripe old age of 33. I'm still kind of on a journey to figure out what milieu of medications work for me. You know, when I think back on it, I definitely have had ADHD my whole life. I also have a learning disability called dyscalculia. I've also been diagnosed with OCD and depression and anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, I have like a freaking alphabet soup of garbage in my brain. And so when I first went to try and get diagnosed with ADHD, I went in and the psychiatrist started asking about school. And I was like, oh no, I was good at school, right? I was like, you know, A, B student. I really liked school. I was really good in English and writing and humanities and not so good in math. But like, I made it work. And she goes, okay, well, you got good grades. You know, what were your grades in grad school? My grades in grad school were a 4.0 or 3.999. I think I got one A minus in grad school. Let's not talk about it. And so she was like, there's no way that you have ADHD. And it didn't make sense to me that that was sort of the, you know, her reasoning for that.
It's where you draw the line. Like you can't have figured out a way to cope with this enough to pass school and on your own without drugs.
Yeah. Like, and that's exactly what it was. And so eventually I did convince her to let me go through the screening process, and lo and behold, I have ADHD. But I think the thing that I realized is I did not realize how strong my ability to compensate was for, you know, the areas where I wasn't good. I would overwork in the areas where I was. And so I wound up being really successful because the things that I loved, ADHD is not about you can't focus. It's about you hyper-focus. Mm-hmm. And you hyper-focus on the wrong fucking thing, you know? So it's like, I really should be writing this like academic article that I'm writing. And instead I'm watching like 10 minutes of the beginning of every gay sitcom on Hulu. Like literally how I spent my past hour before I got on here with you. You hyper-focus on something you're interested in and not the thing you're supposed to be focusing on. But the thing that I was interested in was the reading and the English and the writing. And so I fell into it and I became really good at it because it was the thing that my ADHD wanted me to focus on. And because I was smart enough and well supported enough by my parents and my teachers and my community that like, it didn't matter that I got a B minus in math because I was getting an A in English, or it didn't matter that I got a D on my homework grade in economics because every paper that I wrote was good enough to bring my grade up to a B. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that I wasn't struggling. It was just that I like learned how to play to my strengths. And I'm now But I'm now in a position like I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I read this book called Normal Sucks. And it's about autobiography of a neurodivergent adult who's also like a public speaker and blah, blah, blah. He's really awesome. His name is Jonathan Mooney. Go read the book. It's fantastic and really short. And what he was saying is that if we like live in a society where everybody is trying to strengthen their weaknesses, we are never going to have progress. And what we need to do is strengthen our strengths and continue to work on what we're good at, and then make sure that when we're in collaborative work environments, we have people that offset each other. And that's it. There's some things that I'm really, really, really good at. And there's other things that I am not. You know what I'm not good at? Remembering to take out Jonna's garbage.
So true. It's so true.
but I can design a mean flower, you know? And so it's like, I am not the most like scheduled, regimented, organized human being, but I have a creative mind through the roof, and I am really good with words, and you know, and it's so like, why don't have me, you know, make everybody's work schedule. Not that you ever, this is not a real example. Don't have me make everybody's work schedule, because I'm just going to get frustrated with it. But like, if you know, if you need a pretty sign drawn, I'm your girl. Yeah, exactly. No, I think, I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know. I wish our society worked more than like that, especially as the parent of a special needs kid, where I see, you know, my son has his areas where he is like crazy brilliant. And then he's also 4.5 years old and not potty trained. And so it's, you know, he has his strengths, he has his weaknesses. And I just wish that what I want to do, the reason I advocate for him so much, is because I want to build a world where he doesn't have to try and be a round peg in a square hole, or vice. I don't know what the phrase is, but one or the other, where we can change the shape of the hole to fit him, you know, in where he's going to be most successful. And that's, yeah,
Yeah. I have hope. I have hope.
For I know. I do too.
I mean, obviously there's going to be some more shit because we're a bunch of assholes living on this planet. Yeah. I can't even lie. Like we're a bunch of assholes. And, but I do have hope that the least asshole-y of us all will make it better for the rest of us.
I hope, man. I hope.
Oh, man. All right. I don't want to keep you up to a bazillion o'clock. So it's at the end of all the shows, I ask all the guests the same 5 questions. It's 5 cool. question time. 5 question time. Okay. Number 1, tell me about an experience that shaped who you are today.
I mean, I feel like I already talked about it, you know, going through everything we went through, we've gone through and are continuing to go through with my son has been so formative for me. And, you know, not only given me like a really great outlook on enjoying all of the little moments in life, but also made me want to go out and learn how to really help people, right? Like, don't just throw your money at a charity and say, great, I did my good deed, you know, like truly learning how to build support groups and communities and all of that stuff. And I love that part of myself. Like I'm a fucking powerhouse. And I say that having gone through a lot of therapy where I've said like, no, I'm weak and I'm not worthy and all of that. But like when I can take a step back in the moments where I can take a step back and look at myself the way that I know you look at me, or the way that I know, you know, the amazing women that I have in my life look at me, the way that my husband looks at me, I see myself and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm fucking awesome. So seriously, yeah.
Totally fucking awesome. Okay, y'all. So for anyone's watching this video, I've been drinking this beer. I don't really drink, like very, very rarely do I drink, but I've been drinking this Sour Me Unicorn Farts beer by Duclaw Brewing Company. Apparently it's glittery. I can't tell in the can, so they should put it in a bottle. That's my one marketing.
Bottles are not as eco-friendly as cans are.
I know, but I want to see the glitter. Like if you're going to put glitter in it.
You're not supposed to drink beer out of the can. You're supposed to pour it into a glass like a bougie motherfucker.
Well, who does that? Like it should say right on it, like pour it in a glass or you'll miss the glitter until
my husband pours every beer into a glass because he's.
Well, I mean, I'm going to now because it might have glitter. It might have glitter in it. I have to see it.
All right. Question 2.
Question 2. As you have 2 people with ADHD trying to do a quiz.
Yeah, right. This is not going to work.
No, it does. It does. I got this. I have it on a piece of paper that I wrote right before my first episode. And I've kept the same piece of paper in front of me during every episode.
I'm proud of you. That's great.
Because I can't remember 5 questions. The same 5 questions I asked.
You also don't know where your bone folder is.
Oh man. Okay. Number 2, when you feel defeated or overcome, what do you tell yourself to keep going?
I just answered that. I tell myself to take a step back and look at me the way that the people that love me the most look at me.
That's so good.
Yeah, it really is. It's like a good rule of thumb. I try not to like say anything to myself that I wouldn't say to my best friends. Mm-hmm. And so it's good because like I keep myself in check. Like I'm always sort of questioning whether I'm making, you know, the best decision in the moment or whatever. But I'm also able to be like, yeah, no, you're not allowed to tell yourself that you're a garbage human today because you're pretty functional.
That's awesome. I think we need shirts that says I am not a garbage human today.
I just want one that says I am pretty functional. Like on a scale of 1 to functional.
We'll have to each get 1 of each and stand next to each other.
All right. Question 3.
Tell me about a way that you overcame a failure or a mistake and what you learned from it. I think I asked you this on the job interview.
What did I say?
I have no idea.
She only hired me because she interviewed me while I was on the phone chasing my child around the zoo.
but you were still able to conduct like a good, like you had this really good air about you. Like you were totally in control of the situation. And I was like, if you could pay attention to what I'm doing, keep your kids safe out in public and like come across as, you know, a wonderful, educated, just all around awesome person all at the same time, I was like, that's the person I need in my life.
I don't know. I mean, I've made a lot of mistakes. One of the hallmarks of ADHD is speaking before you think. And so there have been a lot of moments in my life that like are those like really awful, cringy ones when you think back on them. And I'm learning now to be less cringy about them and more like, hey, what can we learn from that? Which is good. And I think that's sort of when I get metacognitive about myself, I at least feel like I'm putting that experience to good use rather than just like sitting here and being embarrassed about something that I said that was not nice or whatever 25 years ago. Cause I do that.
Yeah, totally.
Like remember every awkward thing I've ever said and like hope that the people that I said them to or around don't remember that I said that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Yeah. Four.
What one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track? Besides Chris.
Yeah. My husband basically is my to-do list. I tell him I will do anything you ask me to do around the house. You just need to ask me to do it. Like I can't, I'm not the person that walks into the room and is like, oh my God, this place is such a mess. I'm the person that walks into the room and grabs the one thing that I need and leaves, you know, and I don't notice all of that. So, yeah, my husband keeps me in check, but, repeat the question.
What one trait or habit is most responsible for keeping you on track?
I think so. I have a really spectacular friend who is a marathon runner. And she got me into running and I hate it so much, but I started running last June and, my first mile that I ran was like 15 minutes because I walked it. And now like on a good day, I can run at 11:30. So that's, you know, that's pretty cool. But the running has been neat because it gives me the opportunity to sort of like set these little goals for myself. You know, I want to do however many miles this week or this month or this 2 months. And it doing that, endorphins are a good thing. And so like when I'm feeling like I want to take a nap, I really try to push myself to take a run instead, because then I'm awake and I'm back on track because I have all of these like good chemicals and hormones running through my body. And then, you know, and then I come back and I'm like, oh, right, I am a functional human being because I just needed to do something with all of this weird energy that's in my body. So the running is coming on track for a lot of reasons. One, because it focuses me and helps me release some energy, but also because I can get my little dopamine hits by, you know, like a 2 mile run takes me like a little less than 25 minutes. And so in 25 minutes, I get like a really nice dopamine hit along with all of the other adrenaline and hormones and stuff. And then I'm smooth sailing.
Make me almost want to start running, but not really.
Terrible.
I wish I could start running. I just hate it.
I do. I mean, it's exhausting. And then I feel so good afterwards. And I plug in my audiobooks and, you know, just kind of disappear into whatever queer romance novel I'm reading at the moment.
I love romance novels.
Oh my gosh. I have spent the last like 6 months of my life listening to queer romance. So if you want some gay loving, I got it for you.
Seriously, I have read so many romance novels since the pandemic started. Like, yes. I didn't realize at first that my Kindle didn't register that I had finished a book unless you scroll all the way past like all the acknowledgments and shit at the end of the book. And so the first maybe 30, 40 books that I read, I didn't do that. And then one day I like actually got to the end of one and then it was like, here's your reading insights. You've only read one book. And I'm like, what? Are you crazy? I've been reading like a couple books a week at least, you know? And so since I started actually finishing all the books, I read 46 books last year that it counted, but there was at least like 30 or 40 before it started counting them. And then so far this year, I'm at like 25 or something crazy.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it.
Oh man. Okay. Number five, what's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten? And what advice would you give to other people?
My mother would tell you that the best piece of advice she ever gave me was never to drink tequila and eat peanut butter sandwiches.
But what would you say?
Well, so she gave me that advice. I don't know if it was the greatest advice I was ever given. I mean, the greatest advice that I was ever given, this is so cliche, but I'm all about the fake it till you make it. Because I think when we walk into a room to do something, we are so underconfident in comparison with the way the other people in the room are seeing us. And so, you know, the first time I stepped in front of a classroom, I had serious freaking imposter syndrome and was like, I shouldn't be teaching. I'm only like 22 years old. And they want me to educate these people. These people are scary. I'm scared. And then, so I faked it and I just pretended that I knew what I was doing. And when I didn't know what I was doing, I would go and find an answer or ask somebody's advice. And then all of a sudden I kind of found my rhythm. And like now, you know, I haven't taught in a brick and mortar classroom, a traditional classroom in a couple of years, but I guarantee you the second I step into one, it's going to be like pushing play on the, you know, on the Becky recording, because I just kind of fall back into it after so long. So yeah, fake it till you make it. Try and look at yourself the way that other people look at you. That's a big one that's gotten me through the past year or so. Yeah, that's my advice.
I love it.
Have fun, man. Yeah. Humor, laugh.
Get rabies.
Get rabies.
We're not actually advocating for like the terrible disease that kills people and animals.
It makes you afraid of water.
Yeah, we are not proponents of actual rabies, but have dubbed the experience when you laugh so hard that you can't breathe to be called rabies. The point in the day where you get so slab happy and crazy that you just laugh at anything, rabies.
So we're like almost coming up at the 11:40 p.m. rabies.
Yeah. Rabies o'clock.
Rabies o'clock. Well, I think I'm just, my favorite rabies that I ever had with you was when you were making fun of the size of my arms.
I sound like such an asshole.
You do. Okay, so like I'm like fairly short, right? I'm like, I don't know, 5'3". And so like my wingspan is only 5'3". And we were working with this bucket that was much larger than like my wingspan was, and I couldn't, or it wasn't, but I had to, you needed me to reach one side and then around you to the other side. And it's just like, there wasn't enough arm. And so she started calling me a T-Rex.
Rabies o'clock. It showed up.
All right. Oh, man. On that note, we should probably not disturb your viewers.
My viewers, I think, are used to it at this point. Thank you for being on my show. Do you want to tell everybody about your fun Instagram accounts?
Oh yeah.
You got a bunch of fun Instagram accounts.
Well, I'll just the newest one. So my family's crazy, and on Mother's Day we saw a listing on Facebook, an adoption listing for a puppy who has the same brain condition as my son. And so she's in here. There's a 6-month-old puppy currently sleeping on the floor, and she has done lots of potties in the house today. So we're crazy, but it's already sort of, she's a part of our family and we were meant to have her, because my little guy runs around telling everybody that she's special, just like him. And, you know, I sort of hope that one day he looks back and he's like, oh, they adopted Rosie because she has hydrocephalus, like not in spite of it. You know, they love me because I have hydrocephalus and not you know, and not in spite, or despite, I don't know, one of the spites. And, yeah, so if you want to follow the adventures of my 4.5-year-old child and 7-month-old puppy with hydrocephalus, you can find them at Simon Says Rosie, R-O-S-I-E, on Instagram.
It's so cute, y'all. It's so cute. Like,
yeah.
I'm not a big crier, but like Simon and that dog together, it's like the cutest freaking thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. They just know that they belong to each other. It's great.
It's good times. Anyway, so thanks for being with us on the Reach the Stars podcast. I've been your host, Jonna Willoughby-Lore. I hope this has been an enjoyable experience for all y'all listeners and viewers out there. If you like this crazy show that I've put together, then write us a little review on iTunes. If you're on the iTunes, give us a little thumbs up and subscribe on the YouTube if you're on there. But mostly just like tell somebody about it. Be like, hey, I listened to this crazy show. You should listen to it. I was very inspired by Pump Up the Volume when I was a younger person. And so I've wanted to kind of have my own show ever since I saw that show, that movie. So I hope I have at least sort of followed through with my aspirations to be like Hard Harry.
Love it.
With that note, y'all, have a wonderful night. And we will see you next week on the Reach the Stars podcast. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
A single interaction has the power to change your life forever. This is a place for the stories of those moments. Stories of pursuing dreams, overcoming tragedy and failure, of coming back to life after so much of what feels like dying, of continuing on with only a vision as a map. This is the place where those moments live on. Come sit by the fire, look up at the stars, and be forever changed too.
Thank you for being with us on the Reach the Stars podcast. Our theme music is generously provided by Byrocratic. You can find him on Bandcamp.com. Thank you to all of our current patrons, guests, and everyone else who helps make this dream a reality. We are so proud to be building this amazing community with all of you. If you love this podcast, please consider sharing with a friend, leaving a review on iTunes, and becoming a patron at www.patreon.com/reachthestars. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel to see the videos of these conversations. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, do something cool and tell us about it.